It's Mac break time, everybody. We got Andy Iannocco, Alex Lindsay, and we'll be watching the live blog as the judge reads through 109 pages of jury instructions, Samsung versus Apple, and a whole lot more. Coming up next on Mac Break Week.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 313, recorded August 21st, 2012. Are you on crack? Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces. All you need is a webcam and a click to turn your online meeting into a high-definition video conference. Meet with colleagues anywhere in the world, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today at GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button and use the promo code MacBreak. And by Ford. Ford invites us tech geeks to join the conversation, submit ideas, and grab your tech geek badge at social.ford.com. And by the new Squarespace. Squarespace introduces a new content management system, making it faster and easier to create a high-quality website or blog. Plus, more than 50 new features, including mobile responsive design. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com. Use the offer code MacBreak8. And by audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. This is Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers your, you know, somebody said you shouldn't really call it Mac Break Weekly because we really don't talk about the Mac at all anymore. We'll call it iOS Weekly or something. Joining us from Tampa, Florida, ladies and gentlemen, I give you in the brown trunks, Mr. Alex Lindsay.
It's hot. It's humid.
It is, I bet. Tampa. Yeah. Working there, right? Not on vacation.
No, I'm working here.
You're always working.
And it's very stormy here. We landed on one tire last night. It was kind of. Really, I send my wife. I always send her a text that I'm safely in whatever city I'm in. I said safely in Tampa, but I didn't send it until we actually landed because it was a little rough.
Safely in Tampa. Also with us from Boston, Massachusetts, Mr. Andy Iannocco of the Chicago Sun Times.
How are you, Griota? Greetings, Alex.
Still reading the PDFs from the trial.
Still trying to keep up. We're going, and I was right before I left to come down to the studio. I was reading like the live blog of the jury instructions.
Can you believe they're live blogging this now?
Isn't that yes? Isn't it awesome?
It's kind of amazing. So we're talking about Samsung held hostage day 57. It's Apple versus Samsung. Closing arguments began today. The highlight of the week, though, Judge Lucy Koh, with the jury out, asking one of the Apple attorneys if they're smoking crack. Apparently, the Apple attorneys gave her a 75-page brief covering 22 potential rebuttal witnesses that the company might want to call after Samsung finished presenting its case, which it did last week. The jury was out of the courtroom. Judge Koh said, "What? Why would you give me such a lengthy document when, unless you're smoking crack, you know these witnesses aren't going to be called?" Apple attorney William Lee steps forward. This is all from The Verge, which apparently has a reporter in the courtroom, saying, "First, Your Honor, I'm not smoking crack. I can promise you that." Oh, my goodness.
Now, that is in a courtroom. And then the next step was Samsung subpoenaed your analysis results because he was entering new evidence.
Well, new evidence. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised because both sides are pulling out every stop here.
I never heard a judge talk about someone smoking crack. So I found that to be fascinating.
I'm stunned. Obviously, Judge Koh is just like, she's had it. It's like, yeah. Can we? She said, she told Tim Cook and the CEO of Samsung, whose name I can't pronounce, you guys, you got to settle this. So they had a phone call. You know, remember at the beginning of the trial, they also had a phone call. Judge Koh says, quote, "It's time for peace." Obviously, she's not been paying attention during the trial. she said, I see risks here for both sides, which is an important point. I'm sure the judge has been aware of this, as we have all along, that both Samsung and Apple have had to reveal stuff that they wouldn't like to reveal. That, you know, Samsung runs a risk of as high as a $2.75 billion damages claim. I don't know what the risk is for Apple, except maybe public relations. I don't know. Unless they lose, and then Samsung could countersue, right?
I talked to a corporate trial attorney about this because I wondered why this close to the end of this close to jury deliberations that the judge would actually say something like that out loud. And he offered an opinion to me that some judges can have a really good way of testing the temperature of a jury and saying that if both of you want a positive outcome to this, you will find a way to at least agree on what the result will be before you have a result handed down and inflicted upon you. Sometimes that means the person who thinks that they've scored points is about to lose badly. Sometimes it means that this jury is not going to be able to find anything, and they're going to have to start all over again. The person I was talking to couldn't really elaborate on that. He just said that sometimes if you're inside the courtroom and you have the experience with this, you can tell when the judge is trying to signal to the attorneys that I believe I know something you don't know, and I think it'll be best for the entire cause of justice as well as my overburdened docket if you find a Ramada in conference room you could stay in for the next 2 days and hammer some agreement out.
They talked, attorney Kevin Johnson for Samsung said the CEOs did speak. There was no resolution, just as there hadn't been when
I think the talk that they had, though, was, do you think we're going to work this out? No, I don't think we're going to work that out. Finish this off.
Danish?
Okay. I'm not sure.
It's like the dog and the wolf.
I'm not sure. I could see Samsung saying, look, let's settle this. This is not good for either of us. Apple saying, we agree, but you guys have got to give us $30 a phone, which is, I think, what Apple said it was getting for the patents and the trade dress, and we want damages, and you have to stop selling the Nexus, the Samsung Galaxy Tab, the Galaxy S3, and whatever else you ever make in the U.S. What are they going to say?
I think Apple doesn't have, I mean, other than the money they're spending on this, I mean, Apple doesn't have a lot of downside here. If they don't continue this case, then they haven't set the precedent that people can copy it if they win the case. I mean, not settling and losing settling are almost the same for Apple in the same way. But if they win this case, it will ripple through the entire industry, because suddenly there's a precedent, and suddenly it's going to create all kinds of issues for everyone else using the platform.
Well, that's the risk, right? Apple could lose.
And Apple giving up is if Apple loses, then everyone's going to make phones that look like the iPhone, and Apple will have to compete on that playing field.
Apple's not going to lose. Apple's not going to lose, though. They're not going to lose this one.
Right. And if Apple wins, it means that everybody has to be thinking about every time they build the phone, they have to be thinking and rethinking and rethinking how this works, because now there's precedent.
Tim Cook has to be sitting there saying, you're exactly what you say. We can't lose this. Even if we lose, it's not the end of the world, but we aren't going to lose. And Samsung, why would Samsung not settle? Do they not feel, one thing Samsung might be thinking is that it will be a Pyrrhic victory for Apple, that Apple will lose, but there will be no fines and no injunctions against product. And Samsung would win if they could pay even $1 billion and continue to sell their products, right? That's a win for Samsung.
But I think if they lose, I think that the issue is they get injunctions. And I think that
that's the risk.
It seems like Apple would roll up and start hitting everybody else. I mean, this is once they have this ruling behind them and with the victory, it's not just Samsung that's affected. It's every Android, platform.
It's not even every Android platform. It really is every phone. We were all talking about how wonderfully different Microsoft's Metro-based phones and tablets are. I don't want to speak for everybody else here. But remember that it's not only that they were different because they signed an agreement that they said they would not do anything that's similar to the iPhone and the iPad. They also have cross-licensing agreements with Apple. So what Apple is essentially saying, and it's hard to avoid this conclusion, is that you're right. Every company in the world, their right to produce a phone or a tablet comes through Apple. And so if you do not approach Apple and ask for permission to make a phone or a tablet, you're going to be you're going to be subject to future legal action. That PDF that I was talking about last night, the presentation that Apple gave to Samsung in 2010 when they attempted to resolve this by offering them licensing terms, again, ranging from $22 to something like $50 per handset, as really, it didn't just say all Android devices or all phones that are similar in trade dress to the iPhone. It actually even applied to every Nokia phone they made. Everything that was that did not have, you know, like a 12-digit LCD panel on it as its screen, Apple was saying, at least in this document, that they believe that they are that Apple is owed money for every phone that conforms to any feature phone of any kind. So Samsung, I think if Samsung saw an exit in which they could allow, accept that, yes, we're going to license stuff from, we're going to license technology from Apple. We don't feel as though we have to, but we're going to. If they saw a future in which they could make money without having to go buying and scraping to Mr. Potter to do business, I think they'd go for it. They really are just a company. Apple is just a company too, but even Samsung is even more of just a company than Apple is. But if I think what they really are fighting for is the ability to actually do business in the mobile computing workspace, which is someplace they kind of have a right to be.
Well, maybe what Judge Koh was talking about is not Samsung, but Motorola, because now Google's fired this, you know, and this is never going to be over, by the way. Right. Even Samsung will probably go back to the court with its own suits. Google, via its Motorola subsidiary, is now suing Apple. Actually, they're suing the U.S. International Trade Commission to ban the import of iPhones, iPads, and Macs.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what Judge Koh's thinking is, you know, it's more than just Samsung here. You pissed off Google.
Yeah, we're all, and when Google bought Motorola, some people thought maybe they want to get into the hardware business. They can manufacture their own stuff. Maybe there's this strategic reason. I think they wanted to make sure they had a big stick that they could use to hit Apple with, so that if Apple continued to hit them over Android, they could at least return the fire, or at least be enough of a threat that they would have a negotiating position.
That's what Stephen J. Von Nichols, who writes about Linux and open source for ZDNet, says. It's mutually assured destruction.
Yeah,
that's the old nuclear era doctrine, that if we have enough missiles, the Soviet Union will never attack us because we'd blow them into the Stone Age just as they blowed us in the Stone Age. So we'd be mutually assured of destruction. Therefore, no war will ever occur. That worked. I don't know if it's going to work with Samsung and Apple.
Unfortunately, Khrushchev was more balanced and rational than the average tech CEO. And he had nuclear missiles. So he had to be.
It's no accident that Steve Jobs says he's going thermonuclear war on Google.
Again, who knows what Johnny I was designing? A very beautiful and elegant 40 kiloton MIRV.
Holy cow. This is not good for consumers. I would grant Apple the fact that until the iPhone, all smartphones were crap. We all said that. We all couldn't wait. And when it came out, it did change how everybody thinks about smartphones. And much of what we've seen since has been heavily influenced by Apple. But it does go both ways. And I think that, much of what we see in iOS 5 and 6, like notifications, for instance, were heavily influenced by Android. That's how the tech industry is. From the point of view of consumers, regardless of the merit of these cases, and that's for the lawyers and the jury and the judges to decide. Regardless of the merits of these cases, I think you don't want every single smartphone in the world to have to be licensed to Apple, or do you? Doesn't that hurt us as consumers? Doesn't it raise the cost of phone? Because, by the way, the license fee is paid by us. It's not paid by Samsung or Motorola or anybody else.
Well, the issue, though, is I think that in the Android market, I think a lot of that is much more cost sensitive. And so I think that those licensing fees could equal, for some of those phones, could actually equal the same margin that Samsung's making on the phone. So, I mean, Apple could be theoretically making as much on the Samsung phones as Samsung does for some of the lower margin hardware. So it definitely, because it is more price sensitive. And so it's not something that they can just simply add the cost to the phone all the time in the way that sometimes it feels like Apple's doing. You know, it's not unique. There's a much more competitive marketplace. So it'll be interesting.
And, you know, what people tend to do is inveigh against the idea of patent, software patents. But, you know, this isn't just about software patents. This is also about trade dress. This is a much more traditional. This is like, Yves Saint Laurent suing a cheap Hong Kong knockoff. And that's what this is more like.
See, and part of this is, as much time as I've spent over the past 4 weeks in the show defending Samsung, this is a lot like saying, yes, I know the defendant has been bilking widows out of their retirement funds for 5 years. What I'm telling you is that he didn't kill that storekeeper. I mean, we can prove it. Because the simple answer to the question, has Samsung been stealing stuff, just outright stealing stuff from the iPhone?
Yes, of course.
They have. Starting with the Galaxy, at least the Galaxy 2, which is the first one where I really said, oh man, that you didn't even change the icon. all the way to the Galaxy 3, where it was like, really, you're making a push to talk spoken like search personal assistant. You didn't even change anything about Siri. You just decided to take the, oh man. Don't you know that you're being sued by a lot of people, Samsung? Just why can't you be like those nice boys and girls in the labs at Google when they decide to say, we're going to do something that's kind of like Siri, but we can do a whole new interface? That's like another weekend's work. Let's just get some sushi in for everybody and just have a whole new interface just so that we can make sure that people know we're not really being that blatant about it. Oh, Samsung, Samsung, Samsung.
By the way, in the trial, I think one of the other things Lucy Koh the judge was referring to, is that Samsung itself is claiming that Apple has copied it and wants $400 million from Apple.
Per handset.
Yeah, per handset. So, I mean, what she may be saying is, look, you may, you know, this may go badly for either side here. I do not envy the jury. I don't know what the instructions will be. Among other things, the instructions will be that both sides destroyed evidence. Originally, it was going to be Judge Koh instructing the jury that Samsung did not uphold document retention laws. Samsung said, whoa, wait a minute. And it turns out Apple sent out emails that there was going to be a trial, but Apple did not begin its document retention policy until much later. So the judge said, you know what? You're right. So in the instructions, which she will give probably today or tomorrow, unless Apple succeeds in changing her mind, which anything could happen, she will say, Samsung Electronics Company has failed to preserve evidence for Apple's use in this litigation after Samsung Electronics Company's duty to preserve arose. Whether this fact is important to you in reaching a verdict in this case is for you to decide. There is a huge burden placed on the jury. If you've ever served on a jury trial, it's a fascinating, fascinating process. Well,
and also the
by the way, well, before you say that, now there's, I got to give the other side before then you could say it. She also said Apple, or will say, Apple has failed to preserve evidence for Samsung's use in this litigation after Apple's duty to preserve arose. Whether this fact is important to you in reaching a verdict is for you to decide. Okay,
so,
go ahead.
So basically what she's saying is offsetting penalties.
Yes.
You know, yeah.
So both sides did it.
Defensive holding and offensive holding.
Yeah.
but the question is, are we going to just replay the down or not? That's the...
Yeah, the jury is such an X factor here because I had to stop reading the live blog for the jury instructions to come down here. But the first batch were it seemed like the judge was talking about how trade dress is really, really important on top of everything else. And so much of it is does the jury understand that just because Samsung built a rectangular tablet in which icons are presented in a grid format, it does look like an iPad, but do they necessarily go, well, if it looks similar, that must have been stolen? Is it okay for them to say, well, how else are you going to put things but in a grid? That's how Windows works on the desktop. That's how so many other things work. What are you going to do? Have them build a triangular tablet that just randomly splatters things like drippings of pigeon droppings on the screen, and that's how you're going to represent apps? So I really don't know how the jury is going to go with this. So the evidence could really fit almost any conclusion that any analyst wants to make.
I agree.
It could be a victory for anybody. It really will depend on how well this was all assimilated. We're even those of us who are being a little bit overboard and trying to follow all this stuff. We really can't get a handle on this.
So the live blog that you were referring to is the San Jose Mercury News, which is the journal of record in Silicon Valley. Really, a great newspaper. One of the last along with the Chicago Sun-Times and the New York Times and the Washington Post, sort of the last great.
Thank you, Leo.
Yeah. The poor guy who's doing this, Howard Mintz, in the courtroom, live blogging this, 8:36 this morning, about 3 hours ago, said, "The judge will start with jury instructions, all 109 pages. If jurors don't jump out a fifth floor window when that's finished, we'll proceed to 4 hours of closing arguments." The jury verdict form alone is 20 pages. The jury is faced with an almost unimaginably complex task. And do read these instructions as he's live blogging them, because it's just, here's an example. Key instruction on Apple's trade dress infringement claims: whether Apple's iPhones and iPads had acquired distinctiveness before Samsung started selling its accused phones and tablets, and whether Samsung's devices were likely to cause confusion. I don't know how a jury can even decide whether normal people were confused by this or not. The press has argued this constantly, back and forth. The number of instructions that this jury has to absorb, and by the way, these instructions are the law that they have to decide the case on. The judge is telling them what the standards are for the decision.
And the other challenge is that these are not patent lawyers. These are not people who work in this industry.
That's the whole point. That's why we have a jury of your peers. They're not attorneys. They're supposed to be common sense.
Yeah.
Judges, now, this is the last post from Howard. It was about 15 minutes ago. And then I think he passed out. Judge now in the final stretch, instructing jury on Apple's antitrust claims against Samsung. The antitrust claims. So you've got patent infringement claims, trade dress infringement claims, and antitrust claims. He says these have gotten the least attention and deal with Samsung's alleged handling of its standard utility patents. These are the FRAND. I believe this is the FRAND stuff, where these standard utility patents are supposed to be appropriately licensed at a reasonable price. He says they're sort of the icing on Apple's legal cake. Breach of contract. This is, again, Howard Mintz writing in the Mercury News. Breach of contract. FRAND patent instructions are the types of legal oatmeal that should never, ever be decided by regular people.
Yeah.
So the entire future of smartphone technology sits in the hands of these 12
of 12 people who had enough spare time to sit in the courtroom.
Usually the people on the jury are older people, retirees.
Mm-hmm.
I wish we knew more about this jury. I guess you can't reveal anything about the jury till after the trial. By the way, after the trial, get ready, because the next thing is everybody's going to jump on this jury. I remember being in a trial, and then the press jumps on you and says, "Well," and by the way, not just the press, but the attorneys and the judge, everybody jumps on you and says, "Well, what would happen? What do you think? Yeah. Why did you decide what you decided?" And this is going to be one jury that's going to get a lot of attention. They were told. Wait a minute, judge. They have been warned, among other things, the jury was told not to do software upgrades or install apps on the mobile gadgets they receive while they're in deliberation. Apparently, they're going to get all of these things. Yeah. And they've been told, whatever, you know, you're going to have tablets and phones. You're going to have every bit of this crap in your jury room. Do not install any apps on it or do any software upgrades, okay?
Well, that's got to work in Samsung's favor because, you know, it's one thing to look at screenshots, but the thing that differentiates iOS devices from Android devices is how well the thing actually works live. And so once they say that, okay, I got three apps to crash on this Samsung thing, right, but the iOS thing is working, no one would ever confuse this crashy, buggy, hard to understand thing to the Apple thing. Congratulations, Samsung. Go with God.
You win. It's crap. The physical devices you receive, this has been the instructions to the jury, the physical devices you received are evidence in this trial. You may use them in your deliberations. You may connect to the internet through the web browser application, but you must not alter or modify the devices in any way. You may not insert SIM cards into the devices. Once connected, you must decline any software update notifications that may be presented to you. You also must not download any content, apps, music, photographs, or games. Must be tempting. Put a little Angry Birds on there. That's a happy jury room.
Well, so I think Angry Birds is really one of the only ways that you can test, you know.
You have to put that on there.
That's kind of like a basic test.
Wow, this is just, I know people aren't, I don't like to lead with the trial, but this is it. This is it.
Yeah, that is the big news of August.
Right now,
it's
the story.
This big summer tech story.
Yeah. And we're at the end. She's about done with the instructions. There's going to be 4 hours of closing arguments. That'll be after the lunch break. Then the jury tomorrow returns and deliberates.
Well, and I think that if they side against Apple or they side for Samsung.
Just ended. There's the latest from the Mercury News. At 11:40 Pacific time, 1 minute ago, 60 seconds ago, 109 pages of jury instructions were completed.
Wow. But I think if it's largely against Apple, I think it's business as usual. I don't think anything. I think, you know, Apple will continue to try to find other ways to sue people, but everything will continue to look like it. If Apple wins significantly, I think it could be one of the biggest rulings in the industry.
Yeah. If Samsung couldn't mount a defense against Apple, everybody else is just going to knuckle under.
And the issue that you have is that you now have two operating systems that pretty much run the show. I mean, obviously Microsoft is working on the third, but right now there's two that represent, what is it, 80-90% of the market, and with one suddenly significantly crippled, you know. And I think that's the interesting thing.
There's a possible upside here. I think I really hope that Apple doesn't win significantly enough that they can now go out and enforce their will against other tech companies. But what I would really, if Apple does win, what I would really love to see is every other hardware manufacturer say, we have to unite and make sure that we can create a product that is essentially Apple-proof. So we are going to build an entirely new unified hardware and software platform where feature number one is going to be for us, the manufacturers, where our patents are rock solid. The design is rock solid. We design it in a clean room environment, and nothing could possibly be said that this is copying from iPhone. And then because this is now the free and open standard that Apple really can't sue you for using, this becomes the world standard for phones. And the fact that it was designed to make sure that it's not duplicating the iPhone in any way, shape, or form means that it is not going to be designed to duplicate a phone that was designed 6 to 7 to 8 years ago, and it could be something magnificent and brand new. So if there's any reason to think that there could be good news from Apple winning this suit, it's the industry getting together and for now having finally a crushing financial incentive to innovate.
Well, and I think the other big winner could be, you know, Microsoft. You know, I mean, that's the, you know, they could, ironically, Microsoft could be the big winner from a lawsuit. But, you know, it definitely creates an opening there for the Windows phone, Windows 8.
No.
Nothing
creates an opening for Windows.
It's an opening. I don't know if they can take into it. I think the biggest problem people have is that it's just so hard to...
Nobody wants Windows Phone 8.
It's so hard to design without using the metaphors that have been used in the iPhone.
No, I disagree. I think that Windows Phone 8 is a really good example of how you can innovate the OS and not step on anybody's toes. Although, you know, there's stuff in Windows Phone 8, obviously Microsoft licensed from Apple, like, you know, slide to unlock. Yes, sliding up, not sideways, but that's slide to unlock. Yeah. Tap to click. Many of the patents that Apple's suing Samsung over are clearly licensed in Windows Phone 8. But I think the real issue is all about ecosystem, and I think that's why Windows Phone 8 doesn't have a chance. Yeah. There's just not the apps. Now have two incumbents that have more than 350,000 distinct apps in their app store. It's over.
Well, it's not over because Android got there fast enough, and now they're a really credible marketplace. Now they need to create the next part of the puzzle in which they can attract developers who want the same rush at the gold bag of gold that they feel is there for iOS. But what gets me kind of bothered here is that I would be okay with Apple punishing people for making anything that looks remotely like the iPhone, if they limited that to just elements of the iPhone that I can't go through my closet back in my office and pull out other phones and other mobile devices saying, no, here's a device that has that same feature. Nope, here's another device that has your icons set up like that. No, here's another device predating the iPhone that has like a row of like home icons that stay persistent. You know, if they're saying that you can't do vertical scrolling, you can't do icons on a grid, you can't have a smartphone that does things other than receive and make calls and occasionally get photos via SMS, that's where I have the disconnect with Apple. So I really do think that Android is okay. I don't think that Android is stolen outright, at least not in the way that people are claiming that it was just a copy paste into new hardware. I think there's an important principle here that I hope doesn't get trounced with all the legalese.
Well, we're going to watch with great interest. I'm not sure how I feel. I've been going back and forth on this. I carry my daily driver, as they say, is a Samsung Galaxy S3. But of course, like everybody, I can't wait to see the new iPhone. Mm-hmm. The main reason I don't carry the current iPhone is that screen, 3.5-inch screen. After you use a big screen for a while, it's really hard to use.
It really is like the difference between the Retina iPad and the iPad 2. I still carry both phones every single day. Today, I ran out of the house really quickly because I overslept for a breakfast thing. Did not have time to go and figure out which of the other three rooms I happened to drop my Android phone in. And so, no problem. I have the same apps, actually identically the same apps for navigation on my iPhone as on the Android phone. And all throughout the drive to breakfast, I'm like, gosh, that's a small screen. Like, you know what? That's a really small screen. It's like, ooh, I wish that screen
was bigger.
It spoils
you, doesn't it?
It does ruin you. It doesn't even necessarily matter what the pixels per inch are.
No.
The fact that you've actually magnified it so it's a larger square in your field of view, at least when you have it on your dashboard and using it as like an entertainment and navigation thing, that's at least one area in which I'm like, I wish you were larger.
Yeah, and there's lots of people who like a 3.5-inch screen. They may be a little disappointed in the new iPhone because I don't think it's going to be 3.5 inches. But there are people who want small screens, people with small hands, people with small heads. But
people like their hands to look real big.
Yeah, but I started with the Galaxy Note, which was ginormous, and the next one's going to be even bigger. So I don't know. Well, you know, it's just. I think we all agree innovation and competition is good. Apple has a right to protect its interests and a duty, indeed, to protect its interests. I'd be very interested to see what the jury decides. I hope that it doesn't limit choice. That's my main hope. I hope we continue to have the kind of choice that we have right now. That, from my point of view, is what consumers.
And I will say that's my number one concern. I think that Apple has some viable complaints here, but my number one concern is that if Apple gets too much of a dominating position, it really will limit the growth of the phone. Apple is not fast and furious about anything, and if they don't have any competition, I think they'll be less so.
Right. We're going to take.
They have not won the right to be president of phones. We don't have to. They're not the attorney general of phone. All law does not pass through that. That's right.
But it could after the jury decision. We just we'll have to see. Yeah. Hey, Tom, we should probably be ready for breaking news whenever that jury comes in with a decision. Just a thought. It won't be tomorrow, I don't think. It may not be next year. It's a 20-page jury verdict form alone. But I think we should be ready with breaking news.
This could be like Nightline during the Iranian hostage crisis. You start every show on Twitter with
jury held hostage.
Jury standoff day 273. No movement yet in the jury room. We have attorneys.
Oh, I feel sorry for Howard Mintz, who probably is going to have to sit on that very, very hard bench outside the jury room for more than a day or two. Very interesting. Very interesting. We're going to find some Mac. There's no Mac news. We'll find Mac rumors. That's your assignment. Mac rumors coming up. But first, a word from our friends at Citrix. The folks who do that great GoToMeeting, you've heard me talk about it. One of the things I like, and as for Mac people, this is important, is that you can hold a meeting on a Mac or a PC and attend the meeting on a Mac or a PC. It doesn't matter. Or, I really like this, on an iPad or an iPhone. The GoToMeeting works great. In fact, if you have an iPad, you can not only attend a meeting, you can send video. This new HD Faces feature means that you can use the iPad's camera, built-in mic, and speakers, and attend and participate in the meeting just as somebody at a desktop would. But you're holding an iPad. I love that. With the iPhone, and I bet you they add this feature to the iPhone, but right now with the iPhone, you can attend, but you can't send the video out. You can listen, you can speak. I bet you that's the next. Maybe they're waiting for the new iPhone. I don't know. I want you to give it a try. It's a good time to do a GoToMeeting because, after all, aren't we all like traveling all around for the summer? We're on vacation. We want to just spend more time at home, but it doesn't mean business stops. That's why GoToMeeting is a really great way to meet with clients and to pitch colleagues, or vice versa, meet with colleagues and pitch clients, and collaborate too, because GoToMeeting has screen sharing plus the camera that give you the chance to see the screen and to see the person you're talking to. I just am a big fan. I want you to try it. We've got a deal. GoToMeeting.com. See that try it free button? Click that, and you'll get 30 days free of GoToMeeting plus HD Faces. The new HD Faces feature is fantastic. In fact, we're seeing if we can adapt that to use it as an alternative to Skype from time to time on the show, because it looks really good. GoToMeeting.com. Click the try it free button. Please use the promo code MacBreak. MacBreak is the promo code. There she is.
She's using the, see, she's on her iPad in a meeting.
I have a plant in my office. Do you have a plant in your office?
Yes.
I see the plant in your office.
Guess what? This is my bedroom.
Is that a ficus?
Yeah. Look at that.
Did you get that sheepskin throw at IKEA? My sister has one like it. That's, do you like it as much as my sister does?
That's what video can do for you. I don't know if it's true or not, but everybody has now absolutely, consensus is here that it's September 12th is the announced date for the new iPhone. That seems to be consensus, and that it will be available September 21st, right? I don't know. Apple has said nothing. Right. So I don't know how they know.
That sounds good. Obviously, I've gone all in on.
Yeah, September you booked 12th. A plane ticket.
Yeah. If they were to announce it on the 12th and release it about a week later, that would be also consistent with what they've chosen to do in previous iOS devices. So, previous hardware devices, because that gives them they have the big media event. Certain people will be ushered into rooms and receive pre-release hardware, and then their reviews will arrive a week later, two days before.
And we want that to be Andy.
If it happens, it happens. I've got as always, everybody who covers Apple who new reviews hardware. If you're smart, you have a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C. And plan C is always, what if I don't even get access to loaner hardware at all? Good, have a plan C. Never count on anything. It's not an entitlement.
Have a plan C. So what are you going to do? What's your plan C? Going to go to the beach?
Well, see, this is why it's important to make sure that whoever's paying for your hotel room pays up in advance. Make sure that money's gone, no matter what happens.
We'll give you the check. Come on. Well, don't worry. We're good for it. You can always bitch on the show that Tuesday, so we know. So it's a Wednesday. It's a Wednesday. Is that what September 12th is a Wednesday, right?
The 12th is Wednesday. That would also be consistent.
So are you going to – I don't know what – I guess what we'll do is flip-flop with Security Now and have Security Now be on a Tuesday, as we usually do, because Apple always does it. This to us. Have MacBreak Weekly on a Wednesday. You'll be in the room. If you haven't received an invitation yet.
I wouldn't until probably
everybody else.
Like,
yeah.
The last week in August, right?
So I pray that you're not been tarnished. You have been receiving invitations all along, right?
Yes.
You are not tarnished by your association with
if there have been a couple times I haven't been invited, I don't believe I've been disinvited. It's mostly a choice of it's mostly a case of I live 3,200 miles away.
You can't go.
And also given the distance between when they usually announce and when the event is, they kind of know that in the past I sometimes will I expected an invitation every single time, it was like maybe I would go to two out of every four, because sometimes it's like I just can't. There are other things I need to spend $1,300 for. Like I'm covering this other event on the other side of the planet. Like 2 months from now, I really can't spend $1,200 for 2 days in San Francisco, and so I have to decline. But don't worry. I don't believe that I've been tarred and feathered by my association with the Mighty Twit Network.
So we have from YouTube. The source of all things good and wonderful in the world. This leaked official Apple iPhone 5 promo video that will be shown, Andy, while you sit in the keynote watching. This is what you will see.
Before designing the iPhone 5, we studied how customers use their iPhones, and we discovered something pretty interesting. People only use iPhones to take photos of their food. They're sad and alone, so they use pictures of food to create the illusion of a fulfilling life. With that knowledge, we went back to the drawing board, introducing the iPhone 5. We rethought everything, from big stuff like screen resolution to small details like the size of the screws and the inclusion of a 50mm macro lens. These pictures look so good that nobody would ever imagine you lie awake at night wondering why you can't feel happiness. And with a maximum ISO of 6400, the iPhone 5 takes stunning photos in whatever dimly lit, exposed brick, no reservation, basement restaurant your friends care about more than each other. Siri's all new too. She can recognize the food you photographed and suggest fun captions that'll imply a life worth living.
Chickpea salad. Nom nom nom. I am happy. I am happy. I am happy.
The iPhone 5 is a game changer. Its photos are sure to garner all the likes, hearts, pluses, pins, stars, reposts, reblogs, retumbles, and retweets that you've used to replace...
It's a digital SLR for those who are listening.
I've been using the iPhone 5 for a few months now, and it's already turned my life into a seemingly enjoyable lie. Last weekend, I was having brunch with my girlfriend, but we had nothing to talk about. So I took out my iPhone 5, I snapped a pic of my Eggs Benedict, connected my iPhone to my MacBook, found a Wi-Fi hotspot, uploaded that photo onto Facebook, and within minutes, I had friends telling me how much fun I was having. And you know, for one brief moment, I almost believed it myself. The iPhone 5. Picture your life better.
See, and we return to the eternal philosophical question that's been played out ever since God invented high school. Who is the bigger loser? The loser or the loser who spends time pointing out what a bunch of losers the losers are? At least when I take a picture of my of a really spectacular like plate of sushi, that's over and done with about half a second. That took like half a day to shoot, another half a day to edit. He probably went and bought lighting and bought sound equipment.
It's funny, and it's you know, okay. I mean, it will probably be a very good camera, but I think there'll still be a phone.
I believe there won't be a hand grip or a bayonet lens mount. No.
There is a point to be made, though, and this was I found this interesting. I talked to some real people the other day. It was an amazing experience, and I don't want to not one I'd like to repeat, but it was a really at the time I found it really informative. And one of the things they said, which surprised me, we were talking about phones, and I thought, oh, here's a chance to get some, you know. Get some on the ground research, and I said, well, because some of them had Android, some of them, and I said, well, why don't you have an iPhone? And they universally agreed that people buy iPhones not because of the technology, because it's hip. There's a lot to. Do you think that's true? One of the reasons people buy iPhones is because it's the cool phone to have, as opposed to anything else.
I mean, I definitely think that that for some folks, it's definitely some areas, it's a status symbol. I mean, I know that
it's a status symbol. That's exactly the word they used.
I can tell you in Africa, it's a huge status symbol. I mean, because a lot of them, you can't get it. You can't get it locally. So if you have it, it's like having a rare car, you know, because it's not something
you
can buy
locally. Well, that's different. But I understand that. That's like wearing blue jeans is, you know, that's like hip.
But it is specifically that brand. I mean, it's not that they have Android. It's not that they, you know, those are also can be hard to get. But there really is this thing about the iPhone. And I think that.
Which means may be missing the point, because we keep talking about speeds and feeds and screen size and stuff like that and ecosystem. They're not asking those questions.
Yeah, but nonetheless, there's a difference between style and fashion. Apple is the old saying is that style is forever, fashion is just this season. And Apple really is more into style than fashion. It's not enough. It is emphatically a hip phone to get. It's the great brand. It's the great thing you want to be seen holding in your hand. But the reason why Apple holds on their customers is because after you get over that initial endorphin rush of holding this really cool thing in your hand and everyone's saying, hey, is that the new iPhone? Why, yes, that is. I'm an early adopter. I have the new iPhone. it produces such a great experience that they really don't want to wander away from that. Whereas I think that there's a little bit more mobility when you buy an Android phone. I have been getting lots of comments about the Samsung Galaxy 3. I've never had people tell me that the Android phone I was using was a hot, cool phone that is their dream phone, but it's been happening quite a bit during the summer. But nonetheless, I think that even if they did get their hot dream phone and it was an Android phone, next time they need to get a replacement hardware when their contract runs out, I don't think they'd be as committed to getting another Samsung or even another Android phone as an iPhone user would be to be getting an iPhone. There's just so many knock-on advantages of the iPhone that go beyond the styling.
Well, but I think that you do make decisions. I mean, when I see someone with an Android, I think that they're geekier than someone with an iPhone.
That's not true. That's not true. This was in Pilates class. All right, I'll tell the truth. And these people had Android phones, and they were very comfortable with them. They knew how to use them. They, in fact, were not high-end Android phones either. They were inexpensive. I think one of the reasons people choose Android is there's a perceived cost factor.
Right. Right, because I said for the folks that I see, mostly I think that either they just walked in and got a phone, or they're geekier and they want the extra features. If I see a BlackBerry, I usually think that they're either connected to the government or just really having a hard time figuring out how to move forward. But an iPhone is kind of the average. I mean, you look at the BlackBerries, you're like, really, you have one of those? I mean, am I the only one that thinks that?
Yeah, no, I do keep my eyes out. I am the guy who will be looking at someone's hands every time I pass through any public space to see what kind of phone they're using. And I've been seeing more and more non-iPhones in people's hands as a proportion of the marketplace. I think part of it is because other smartphones have been becoming better and better and better. Like they're not as good as the iPhone, but they've certainly gone beyond that level where people say, okay, this is good enough that I'm not noticing how bad something is, and a lot of other factors come into play. And once you get above that level, it becomes an issue of, I have devoted exactly 1 hour of this afternoon to replacing my phone. I'm going to go to the Verizon store that's near my house on my way back home from work. I'm not going to go seek out an Apple store. I'm not going to go comparison shopping on a walk-in there. And whichever one strikes my fancy and I get a good deal on, that's the one I'm walking out with. And then they'll be very, very happy with that for the duration of their contract, because they're not looking for those finer, finer points, those finer, finer elements. You can spend 3 months and $2 million trying to figure out exactly the right pixel dimensions of a back button to make sure that ergonomically you have the most perfect design possible, but there's a good chance that nobody's going to notice or appreciate it.
Well, and I think that I think really between the high-end Android phones like the S2, S3, I think those are, I don't think that they're better or worse anymore. I think that they are equal. They're just different, you know, in some cases better. So I don't think that I think it's just an interesting thing with the interface. Like if you go to DC, I fly a lot through Dulles and Reagan, and then there's BlackBerries everywhere.
That's BlackBerry land because of the government.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's still, BlackBerry is still, I only see it in two places. It's still a popular fleet phone. That's the sort of phone that you're assigned. And also I see them in movies where somebody's seen using a smartphone, because BlackBerry will probably pay you to put a smartphone in Steve Martin's hand in The Big Year. They probably will not. iPhone is saying, no, we'll let you use our phone. We're not going to give you, no, we're not even going to give you a freebie. I mean, yeah, we don't need
to buy that phone. Steve can use his own iPhone if he wants.
Yes.
Well, I can tell you one.
I'm starting to think that maybe I should move to LA and start like a consultancy business like that, because in every one of these phones, like the Big Year is a particularly good one, where Jack Black is using like an old fashioned flip phone.
Yeah.
Steve is using a BlackBerry. I'm thinking that my job is to be, I will hire myself out to movie productions to teach these actors how to use a BlackBerry and how to text message using a 9-digit keypad, because they're used to using iPhones. They have no idea how these damn things work.
Backwards tech help. Retro tech help. That's a good business.
Alex, help me set up the LLC on this. Give me some lawyers.
RetroTechHelp.com.
Yeah, well, you know, most of the time when we do those with the movies, there's nothing on the screen at all. They're hitting whatever they're hitting, and it's it's a green screen.
They try not to show it because it looks dated when you do. I was just somebody saying in the chat room, and this is true. I was just thinking, Aaron Sorkin's newsroom, it's all BlackBerry. They're all using BlackBerries in that. I don't know if that's because of promotional consideration or because Aaron Sorkin is kind of a Luddite. You know where they're not using BlackBerries or Android? Yahoo. Marissa Meyer just gave her entire staff new iPhones. 10,000 iPhones. Now, the articles are saying, oh, this proves that Marissa was bitter about Google and it's a little shot across the bow. I don't think so. I think she just doesn't want to revolt. If she gave that staff Android phones, they'd be pissed.
Well, I think that
they want iPhones.
But wouldn't they, if she had given out all Android phones, the Yahoo staff would have been like, oh, here it comes.
Yeah.
Google executive comes in and forces Google. They're trying to make us Google. I think this is kind of an obvious choice.
Well, isn't it also possible she wants every single one of her employees to be running the exact same yes. platform? So if they're going to be using Yahoo internally as a skunk works for their own social media stuff, they know that they don't have to worry about having three or four different platforms supported.
It is, even Google gives you a choice. Google says you're going to have a Google phone or an iPhone, or maybe even more. They might even offer a BlackBerry and a Windows phone. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because what that also kind of presages is that for Yahoo, mobile development is going to be primarily iOS. Yes or no?
I don't know if it necessarily says that. I think that it's interesting that she decided to do it. It could be a simple goodwill gesture saying everybody gets it's an Oprah moment. No, you get an iPhone, you get an iPhone, and saying, well, thank you. Could you not have given us an iPhone in November when the new phone comes out?
That's a good point. She got a deal. But she was trying to also avoid that Christmas moment. We've all had it where you go, oh, Aunt Belle, an Android phone.
It's a Tam-Tang.
Tablet.
Oh, thank
wow,
you.
Yeah. Boy, thank you.
Which drugstore do I go back to return this?
We're going to take a break. Andy Iannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times. Alex Lindsay from Pixel Corps in Tampa, Florida. I'm so glad, Alex, you made the effort to be with us. It's just not the same without you. We appreciate it. I know you're on the road. Will you be in studio anytime? Will you be here September 12th? I guess that's the big question.
Yes.
All right. So, yes. I actually started saying this, and I have the logistics. I'm not sure, but you're going to be in the room at this supposed Apple event, Andy. So maybe what we'll do is we'll set up a camera outside the room or a Skype system up outside the room so you can come out immediately. After you try it, you got to try because they'll have the demo room.
If I am favored with an invite, I shall do exactly that.
Bring your – oh, okay. Then I won't say this out loud. Because I was going to say, bring your portable broadcasting kit so that you can go into the room.
You know what?
He would never do that.
I should probably bring like a laptop or something and hold it up in front of me.
No.
The States, we can,
he would.
Oh, wait,
Andy,
oh, wait, no. That's exactly not what you should do.
Yeah.
Okay,
no.
Good.
Andy is a journalist with a major metropolitan newspaper who has vast amounts of integrity and follows all rules to the letter. So he's a safe invite.
I will be too busy typing.
Live blogging. We're brought to you today by the Ford Motor Company, and they have a new site they want you to know about, social.ford.com. It is a really interesting idea. It's a place where you can put your ideas for new Ford vehicles. It's a place where you can read articles. It's designed really for, I would say, the geek. In fact, you can go there. They have a badge thing, which is great. You can grab their variety of badges you might want to grab. Warriors in Pink. That's interesting. The classic Ford. But this go one more to the right, and there it is, Tech Geek. I want the Tech Geek badge. I want this badge. You can download it. I don't know what you do with it. You could share it. I don't really know what you do with it. You get it. Here's my Tech Geek badge. Oh, I have quite a few. I didn't know that. I have quite a few Tech Geek badges here. What's going to happen now that I've opened it? I don't know. Social.ford.com. You can also go there and read articles. Lots of great stuff. I have a little article on there you might want to read. I, a couple of weeks ago, got to talk with a guy named Jim Buczkowski. He is one of the lead technologists there at Ford. And he and I talked about a wide-ranging number of subjects, including autonomous vehicles. There's some good articles here. We talked a little bit about some of the new technologies that are coming, some of the apps that are coming, the Sync app link, the API, and more. So if you're interested, check it out, social.ford.com. Grab the Tech Geek badge. There's videos there. And this is, I think, one of the neat things is the ideas. You can say, look, I think this would be really cool. And this here's a guy saying he wants a lower ride height on the F-150 because of the convenience of a 4x4. I mean, these are great. He says you should offer an F-150 with a 4x4 ride height. I don't even know what that means. But those of you who do, you see, here's one. A track app migration package to owners of, that's 2012 Mustang owners. Oh, yeah. Okay, I like that. Oops. I guess they didn't. I got a 404 when I clicked on it. Some really cool stuff here. Seating, EcoBoost. I love it. I wish you'd check it out. If you've been wanting to, this is better than a suggestion box. If you've been wanting to pass along your ideas to Ford, if you've been wanting to share your Ford story, share your Ford images or videos, I love this. Oh, look at that. There you go. Here's your chance. Social.ford.com. We thank Ford for doing such a great job and really involving the geek community, us, in the design of their future cars. So I did find a Mac story, actually, thanks to our chat room. And this is something, actually, he said, you should talk about the display problems on the Retina. And I thought, what display problems? I love my Retina display. But then when I read this article, I said, oh, yeah, that does happen to me. Some Retina MacBook Pro owners seeing interface lag. I'll tell you where I see it is when I'm sliding from screen to screen, there could be some real sluggishness there.
I see a lot of that.
There's a lot of pixels. There's a lot of pixels being moved.
I definitely see a lot of drag and slow movement between that. And I'll be honest with you, what I love about the Retina 15-inch is all of the features and the speed and the two Thunderbolt cables and everything else. What I don't care at all about is the resolution. It just doesn't mean anything to me. It's nice and sharp, but it doesn't
love
matter.
Yeah. I love it. I also see a lot of complaints from people who clearly don't own Retina displays saying, well, all these apps look crappy, but it's only the Apple apps. No, most apps look great. Anything that uses text looks great. Most of the web looks great.
A lot of apps don't. Because there's so many tricks to making sure that you can make your app interact with the user the way you want it to. So even if you were to just simply put a text view in the middle of a window and that's really all your app does, and you don't require any kind of performance, then yeah, it'll probably look great without any modifications. But as anybody who uses Retina, maybe there are times when you'll just, the first time you reinstall an app you haven't used for about 2 weeks, that's the time when, oh, why is this simple text editor?
There are some bad ones, but I tell you what, I must have gotten rid of all of them, like the Twitter app, which still sucks, because I've been using better apps, and I have not run into this problem recently. However, I have run into the lag problem. Your mileage may vary depending on what apps you like. Is there an app in particular that you, like Scrivener or something, that you use, Andy, that you wish would just give you a Retina update?
Office, because I spend a bunch of time. Well, I spend a bunch of time. Word is an important app.
If I were using Office, I might complain too.
Well,
I use Pages. Also, Pages looks great, yeah. But I understand you have to use Office because you're probably filing in DocX format.
Yeah, but and the big, I realize I don't have a Retina MacBook, so I occasionally get to use one for like maybe a couple hours when someone needs to, I'm working on something, someone needs me to jump on their machine for a while. I had a loaner for a while. I didn't feel as though the upgrade to Retina was that big a deal for me. I was using it like every day for about a month, and even then I was switching between my actual personal 15-inch MacBook Pro and this one, and I absolutely appreciated the higher definition, but it wasn't like the difference between the new iPad and the iPad 2, where I almost can't use the iPad 2 the same way I can use the new iPad because of the glaring difference.
God, I love it.
But the real point is that it's not whether you value the extra resolution or not. The fact of the matter is that an app that doesn't display high quality text really looks like garbage next to one that does display high quality text. So this is yet another thing that a developer has to worry about, where if you have a really good word processor, a really good art program, a really good anything, And you were focused on spending 2012 putting the next one point whatever release up there and adding all kinds of new features. Well, now you really have to put the new features and the next revolution on the back burner, because it's now your job to make sure that it looks as good as it did before Apple released this brand new MacBook.
Have you had that problem, Alex, with apps not looking good? Because, boy, I tell you, I don't see it.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of times.
I stopped using my 27-inch Mac Pro.
I think that it's one of those things that you definitely notice it with some browsers and some stuff where everything looks really small. I thought I was on most updated in Firefox, but it still seems to come up where oftentimes it's coming up really microscopic.
Yeah. I haven't had that happen.
Yeah. And so, that's been the big issue as far as the other apps. And I have to admit, I'm frustrated because I feel like there's lag. I feel like there's a lot of processor speed going to all I care about is performance. And so I'm frustrated that I feel like there's processor speed being used up on the display that could be used up somewhere else. And so I haven't really gotten to a point where I really like the new display preferences of all this make it better for the external monitor, internal monitor, and all those other little bits. I felt like I didn't have enough control with the last version where I had, where I couldn't select 1080p or 720p or whatever. Now I have even less control, or I have even less dials on the, on my display preferences. And so I find, I have to admit that I think it definitely looks better. I don't think it doesn't change my world as much as the performance and all the other things that are going on in the, everything else about the laptop is the best computer I've ever used. The monitor looks great, but I just feel like I'm giving up processor speed to something that I don't really care about.
Well, here's what CNET is saying. People are finding, if you're having this lag, which I have had, and I just, I kind of live with it. It's like, it's only when I'm sliding, it's only in a few situations when you have Safari running and you're sliding screens.
I see it all the time.
Yeah,
all the
I see
time.
It now, like now that I've read all these articles, I'm seeing it. But I was just, I think I was internalizing and saying, well, it's laggy because it's moving a lot of pixels. So here's what they suggest, that these are things people have tried and apparently have helped. Run a general maintenance routine that deletes caches. Turn off automatic graphics switching. The first sounds like voodoo. This second one sounds like it might do something. There's a system preference pane. Oh, I used Windows. There's a system preference pane in the Energy Saver where you can uncheck automatic graphics switching. So what it will do is there's two graphics cards on the MacBook Pro, all of the MacBook Pros. One is an NVIDIA GeForce, on ours it's a 650M, and the other is the motherboard, the Intel motherboard graphics. And to save power, to save battery, it will switch to the cheaper motherboard graphics.
And I think if you're on battery, my experience has been, I think that if you're on battery, it almost always goes to the lower, it is really doing the best it can to extend your battery. So I think that, because I definitely noticed that I had that on, and when I wasn't connected to a power source, I was definitely noticing a lot more of the drag.
That makes sense. And then finally, for some people, apparently reinstalling OS X can fix it. That's a pretty extreme, they say, format and install, not just a system upgrade. Now, I did do the upgrade in place, and maybe that's it. So I'm going to have an opportunity to do that because I just ordered, and I'm kind of excited, a new SSD for the Retina. This is the first third-party SSD. You remember I fixed it saying, there's no user serviceable parts in here. It's all glued together. Well, Otherworld Computing, and I've bought these upgrades for my Air, and I really like them, is offering an upgrade for the Retina to 480 gigabytes for $579. It's a little pricey, but I'm going to do this on, I could do this on know-how. We can take apart the Retina on live TV. That'll be, Iaz likes that. Yeah, because he wants to see me suffer. This has, they say, it, not only is it bigger, it's obviously bigger, but they say it's faster, uses the full 6 gigabytes per second SATA performance. So I'll do a benchmark, too, to see if it's worth the upgrade. We'll see how easy it is to do. Now, another thing I tried on the Retina, I put the new Windows 8, Windows 8 is out. Last week, the RTM version of Windows 8 shipped to developers. And I think there's even a free Eval edition that you can get for Enterprise. So I put that on. I thought, well, this would be interesting. So I put that on the Retina. Because I don't know if Windows 8 has the drivers yet for the screen. It did. It worked pretty well. It's fine print, but it looks good. It's usable. I'll bring it in. You know what? I should have brought it today. I should show you. And then I'm told by Windows experts there is a DPI setting in there that I can change that maybe make it more like what the Mac's doing. This high DPI right now, Apple kind of has the market cornered on that. Mm-hmm. But if I could turn the DPI, I don't know, up or down, whatever it is I need to do. Windows 8 looks pretty nice on it. It looks fantastic on it.
Yeah, that's got to stick in somebody's craw. Like, consistently, the greatest Windows.
It's always an Apple.
Are made by Apple. It's like the best ultrabook is an Apple, the best 15 inches an Apple. And now if you want the super high resolution display, yeah, you got to go to the Apple store.
And Arbiter's asked me in the chat room, but what's the point of having high that kind of resolution on such a small display? And I finally understood it. I didn't get it. I asked the same question before I had one. And really, it's you're right. You're running at 14. You're running at half resolution for the problem is confusing dots with pixels. So a dot is still 1440 by, what is it, 980? I can't remember what it is. It's half the resolution. But each dot is composed now of 4 pixels. So you have subpixel rendering, and that's why text looks so good. And then on a few Apple apps like Aperture, Aperture knows enough to use all the resolution. So for picture editing, it's amazing. I love it, but I'm using mostly Apple apps, I guess. I'm not using a Microsoft Office. So, but I've been happy with it. Anyway, I bit the bullet and I bought this.
I will admit that I had my ninth Lilith reached end of life usable life last year, and so I bought a 2011 MacBook Pro last spring. Yep. If this had been available then, I might have waited another month or two to put another $500 or $600 in the kitty and gone Retina.
I do not regret it.
As is, I don't miss it, right.
I do not regret it. And one of the things surprising that I like about it is USB 3, which I guess you get with the other new MacBook Pros as well. It's really fast, and you have to spend a little extra USB keys to take advantage of that, and it's a huge, huge difference.
Yeah.
1440 by 900. Thank you.
And from a production perspective, the USB 3, there are a lot of tools, especially from Blackmagic, that lets you interface high resolution cameras via USB 3. Now, of course, you have Thunderbolt to do that as well, but it is pretty revolutionary. I mean, from a production perspective, the Retina 15 is incredible. I mean, it's just a really incredible machine. I mean, we use a lot of them. and this has become kind of our workhorse for doing on location, especially if you're talking about on location. You can take, we've hooked 4 HD cameras into a laptop and stream to online in multiple resolutions, and it just burns right through it. It's a pretty incredible machine.
It's fast, and I sound like we're doing an ad for MacBook Retina. I'm not doing an ad for it. To me, I've drank the Kool-Aid on this one. I really, really like it.
I have to eat some crow because I just really said that it didn't really matter that they didn't have an Ethernet port. And
does it matter?
About once a day, I'm like, oh, well, where's that Ethernet adapter? And I think, oh, Andy's right. Andy's right. He was right. I can't find that Ethernet cord. And I was like, oh, darn it. So I look for it. Like, now that I don't have one, I look for it like once a day.
I bought the Thunderbolt adapter. I have not used it once, but I have it.
I have the Thunderbolt and the USB 3 because I don't know, and the USB one because I don't know which port will be left over. And I really wish I had one more USB port because I use the two constantly.
And thanks to the chat room, this just in, Verizon is now imposing vacation embargoes September 21st through the 30th, according to Mitch Craig in our chat room. Thank you, Mitch. So it sounds like...
and the email that went out was, prepare for impact.
TechCrunch has the story that a trusted Verizon employee has confirmed the carrier is having an all-staff vacation blackout Friday, September 21, which was the nominative date that the iPhone would ship to the following Friday. Boy, you don't do a vacation blackout unless something important. Maybe the Queen's coming to town. I don't know.
Yeah. You suspect that maybe somewhere inside Apple, there has been a discussion about how useful secrecy can be and how sometimes secrecy is not terribly useful.
Right.
That if you decide to say that it's now that we're 2 months away from the launch of the iPhone, where everybody and his mother knows that there's going to be a new iPhone almost certainly this time, if it helps our partners to be able to plan things a little bit earlier, if it helps journalists to be able to plan things a little bit earlier, to simply create a world in which they can be a little bit more open, not open enough to actually, you know, let advertising materials out the barn door, but at least enough so that it doesn't matter to us that we tell our people 2 months in advance that no, we are not going to allow you to get please don't book a vacation then, because I know normally it's not a problem, but it is going to be a problem this specific week of the year. I don't know one way or another, but it makes me suspect over the past year that maybe at some point Apple is experimenting with sometimes when you keep the lid in the pickle jar that tight, it becomes a lot more difficult to do business.
Well, doesn't it feel like it's become more open in the last year in general? I mean, I just feel like we have a lot more information. We're not back to the pre-Steve days where, you know, you knew everything Apple was going to do for the next year and a half. But I definitely feel like those dates and what's going to be part of it have become much more certain.
It's not really, secrecy is not the point. Control is the point. And judicious control of what people know is a great marketing tool. That's obvious. Well, and in fact, I would say this is a refinement over the idea of blanket secrecy. The refinement is, yeah, we'll tell them exactly, and we'll use the Wall Street Journal to do it so everybody knows it's true, and we'll tell them exactly what we want them to know when we want them to know it. No more, no less.
And the news outlets that are getting that are, you know, by giving it to certain news outlets, obviously, yes, you're also doling out influence. Like, if you want to have that, you will not do knockdown articles about our manufacturing processes.
Interesting point. Sorry about that, New York Times. You won't be getting that tip. All right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to find out what the most valuable company in the history of the world is. The answer might surprise you. But first, this picture of the TWIT staff reading the hottest new novel in modern fiction today. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the Diamond Club.
Oh, my gosh. this whole Diamond Club thing has gotten out of control.
I was shocked. Shocked, I tell you. It seemed to be written in gibberish. All right.
How many personal days did the staff get to take off for spanking? Has that become a thing now?
Yes, like
Mini Muffin Monday and Spanking Saturday?
It's Spanking Saturday here at the Twit Brick House. We're brought to you today by the good folks at Squarespace.com. The new Squarespace is here. The new Squarespace is here. We're very excited. Squarespace 6, we've been waiting for it. I've been playing with it for, it seems like since September, I think. And it is beautiful. It is sweet. And it is a complete redesign. So let me tell you what Squarespace is before I go much farther. It's not the software alone. It's the best hosting plus the best software. And really, by tightly coupling the two, you really get the best of both. For instance, you cannot bring a Squarespace site down because it's such great hosting. And because they know what kinds of traffic they're going to get, they can do things that no other host can do. It's really a very sweet system. And the new Squarespace 5, rewritten from scratch, 15-plus new or improved features, including, and this is the hottest thing right now on the web, responsive design. So instead of having a mobile version that's different from your desktop version, that's what everybody did until recently, you have one design that is so cleverly implemented that it works on any size platform. And as mobile becomes more important than desktop, this becomes key. You know, it used to be a mobile site was just kind of an afterthought. Now it is your site. It's the full site. So Squarespace, for instance, automatically resizes photos so they look great on any screen. The tools for designing have been very much refined. You don't need to know JavaScript or CSS or HTML5, but you'll be using all three automatically. And if you do use those, they have a great pop-out editor that does syntax coloring and everything. I mean, they're really designed for a user to be able to use it who just wants to get a great site up, all the way up to the professional designer. Many, many, many very professional designers use Squarespace.com. Maybe it's the integration with all the social networks Look at this. They're putting a Google map, dropping it right into the page. It's just so sweet. Of course, the import and export from the major platforms, including all comments and images, all SEO, all links are preserved. I want you to try the new Squarespace 6. It is spectacular. Go to squarespace.com, and they have a button right on the front, as they always have. It's one of the things I like about Squarespace. It says, get started. Just press that, and you don't need a credit card. You'll get a free 14-day trial, complete 24/7 support. They've always had free webinars. So at webinars.squarespace.com, so you can learn everything there is to know about Squarespace as you use it. You can get more and more proficient. And if you decide to buy, the pricing is, in all seriousness, I don't know how they do this. The pricing is quite remarkable. If you buy an annual plan, look at the $16 a month. Now remember, this is hosting, this is everything, including, by the way, a custom domain name when you buy an annual plan. So they'll do all the hookup and everything. Plus, unlimited pages, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage. You can have multiple contributors, no limit to the number of contributors. They all have their own individual permission levels. So you can have an editor, you can have a contributor, you can have a writer. You can do it all. I mean, this is $16 a month when you pay
annually. as soon as you consider the whole hosting thing and then the hosting costs and realize that everything else is WYSIWYG on top, this is just kind of a no-brainer, you know, for $16 a month.
That's amazing. Zen says, it's not spectacular. It's going to put us web developers out of business. No, it's not. I promise. Because you can then, on top of it, put JavaScript, CSS3, HTML5. It's really great that way.
And both PixelCore and DB Garage sites are both sit on top of Squarespace, and we have tons of custom code that we've had developers build for it. So we got 80% of it done by Carolyn and I think pretty much put together 80% of it. And then we had someone who really knew what they were doing come in and finish it off with all the added pieces that we needed.
Try it out today, squarespace.com, for the free trial, 14 weeks. You don't need a credit card. If you decide you want to buy, I do ask you to use the offer code MacBreak8, so we get credit for it. That's MacBreak, and 8 is the month of August. So if you're, by the way, that will only be good in the month of August. If you're hearing this later, as people often listen in September or October to the August shows, just use the current month number, 8, 9, 10, whatever. MacBreak, no space, the number 8 is the offer code. Squarespace.com, everything you need to build the best darn website ever. The most valuable company in the world.
The Catholic Church.
Besides the Catholic Church.
I'm sorry. What is the Catholic Church, Alex?
Well, you might get this wrong in Jeopardy. Every news organization jumped on this one and announced that Apple was the most valuable company in the world ever seen. Bloomberg, CNN Money, Wall Street Journal. Apple is now the most valuable company of all time. USA Today, All Things D. Reuters. Well, yeah, but you got to adjust for inflation. So Apple's $622 billion market cap is, I'm not saying it's not good. I'm not saying it's not big. It's huge. It's massive.
It's okay.
I'm not turning it down.
I would like to see it slightly better next time. I'm saying that let's not get out of control.
Let's not
here.
Get cocky.
I mean.
There's more, always more.
Can every one of you at Apple say that you really did your hardest every single hour? This is going to come up during the performance review.
Interestingly, it is not IBM. At first, the Columbia Journalism Review said, oh, we've done the calculations, and if you adjust for inflation, it's... nope, it's not. The largest company of all time in history adjusted for inflation is Microsoft. 1999, Microsoft was actually worth about $856 billion in 2012 dollars. So there's still a ways to go.
Wasn't IBM $1.3 trillion?
No, that was an error.
Oh, okay.
They made a mistake. They double it adjusted for inflation. They adjusted it once and then they adjusted it again. It was a little mistake. So it's funny.
Of course, when we think about value, this, of course, is the publicly traded market cap.
Right. That's all. It doesn't mean anything.
Because there are quite a few companies that are private companies that are considered more valuable than this.
Right.
Large infrastructure companies that...
Oh, that's interesting. Like Bechtel or something. Or Halliburton might be worth
I'm not
more.
Sure. I don't know what their value is, but I think that there are... I think right. there are ones that are considered larger than this that just simply stay very quiet.
Because they're not publicly traded.
Right.
Cargill. Archer Daniels Midland, the country of China. Those might be worth more. But the publicly held, publicly traded companies, Microsoft, 1999 is still the benchmark. So you're right, Andy. Don't get complacent, Apple workers. There's still more to go.
I don't know. I'm always amused by these things as though unless you actually have like a money bet on what Apple's market cap is going to be at any given moment. Why do you care?
Yeah,
But really, all you care about is a company healthy or is it not healthy? Is it growing or is it contracting? I mean, when another Apple news story was how many units Microsoft thinks that they're going to sell of Microsoft Surface later on this year. And a lot of it is, a lot of the speculation is just completely irresponsible. There are a couple numbers I've seen that seem like they're kind of on target and some that are absolutely irrational. But there are people lined up to say, oh, they'll never sell 3 million of these. It's a complete failure, ignoring the fact that so long as a company creates a market for themselves where none existed before, that's great. It reminds me of the late night wars a number of years ago when Letterman moved from NBC to CBS, and he was the Letterman show was the number one late night show in that slot for about a year and a half until Jay Leno took number one and pretty much kept it for the next 4 or 5 years. And a number of people, again, as though they had money bet on this outcome, were saying, oh, well, geez, that's NBC. What a bunch of losers. CBS, oh, too bad for Letterman. CBS is like, we had nothing going on in that time slot. And now we have a hugely successful program that sells a lot of advertising. We are not sad about this outcome. So it kind of dispirits me when I hear so much of this rah-rah, you know, hell, our company's doing better than this other company. When, no, it's not your company. You purchased a phone that doesn't give you any stake in this company whatsoever.
Yeah. It's horse race journalism, and we're all guilty of it, and we just love a winner, and you know, and it's coming around the turn, and it's Apple, it's Texaco, it's Exxon, it's Apple, it's Apple, it's Texaco. By the way, Aramco, the Saudi Arabian oil company, is worth $781 billion. So that's, I guess, the largest, and that's governmentally held. It's private.
Oh man! But that now I really am impressed. Apple is officially oil wealthy.
it's in the oil.
That's how rich they
it's beaten
are.
Exxon, and it is now on its way to beat Aramco. Yow!
Like if Apple were like a musician, they would own giraffes in their backyard. That's how much their level of wealth is like at this point.
They're actually beating the State Grid Corporation of China.
if Apple was this size, they would build an absurdly round headquarters.
Spaceship Cupertino. Yes, exactly.
I still think it's going to take off. I think they're not telling us that yet. It's just going to start spinning and just go off into space.
Couple of quickies before we get to our tips and picks of the day. Apple, I don't know what to make of this. I'm not going to do the retail Apple firing and then not cutting back on it. I don't care what that. I think it's kind of a meaningless story.
It sounds like they were tinkering with how many sales staff they have compared to what they're doing. It doesn't sound like they were making any big decision. They were just playing around with the mix of technology and staff.
It's not a story. I mistakenly talked about it in Twit, and I realized, what am I talking about? There's nothing to say here. Nothing. Move along. Apple TV. Big kind of rumor stories in the Journal and elsewhere about Apple wooing cable companies and wooing content companies. Very confusing. Apple is prepping a new Apple TV, says PC Magazine, but it's not a set. It's maybe a set-top box that they're trying to get the cable companies to go for. Will it announce it at this announcement coming up next month? I don't know. This is Will Greenwald writing in PC Magazine. This is speculation, I'm guessing, not informed.
At this point, if I were putting $10 on it, I would be putting money not on an Apple branded TV set. It would be on just getting iOS into TVs.
That seems sensible, right? Sell the Apple TV technology as a platform in televisions.
I don't think Apple does that.
I don't mean actually build it into TVs. I mean more like build an Apple TV that is more like a cable box that can interact more intimately. I still just don't see how Apple would make money. I don't know why Apple would want the complexity of trying to create a TV set that they can make enough people happy that it would do what Apple would need it to do.
By the way, Tim Cook in the quarterly conference call did say they'd sold 4 million Apple TVs, yeah. Which is not I would call it bigger than a hobby. I think it pales only compared to iPads and iPhones.
It's Roku is selling more, but they're very. it's as a hobby, they've got one of the dominant platforms for internet.
They're in there.
That's pretty good.
And
that's pretty good.
Two sources said that the Apple's looking at a cable compatible Apple TV to be integrated into television sets. This is according to Ars Technica, Jackie Chang writing in her Infinite Loop column. And what some have said is that the idea Apple has is essentially that there's no difference between live and on demand, that even 30 seconds into a live show, you could press play and watch it from the beginning, that it's instantly on demand. And that makes sense for users. The only question is are the cable companies and the content creators going to allow this?
Yeah.
And it's such a mess out there.
It's so complicated. Also, a television set is absolutely the most proletarian consumer device you can possibly find. Everybody expects you pick up a remote control, you push the red button on it, and things happen. And so there are a lot of people out there who, even people who are not necessarily 80 years old, who expect them to pick up a program guide, scroll down to the show they want to watch, press the OK button, and be watching that program. That they don't really think in terms of buying from a store and then streaming. So it's a really difficult, complex problem with a lot of layers to it.
It strikes me that's a problem we should be solving at Twit. I mean, we don't have the complex stakeholder interrelationships. We could just do it.
I think people are just going to have to age out of the system, truly.
Right. That's right.
I don't mean that as a joke.
I agree 100%.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the things that I think is interesting is what we saw in the Olympics, where we found ourselves fairly detached from the live event. Right. it was at first I was very upset that we weren't seeing it live, and then I just learned that I kind of want to see it happen anyway, and I'm going to watch it on demand later, and I'd rather have it all in one place and not jumping around. And I thought that was actually possibly a huge liability for the live sports industry of spending 2 weeks watching a high profile event where you got used to the idea that you wouldn't watch it live. That you just watch it some other way.
If you've read about changes in the Twitter API, and a lot of Twitter developers are very upset, but TapBots, which makes, in my opinion, the best iOS Twitter client. I really love the TapBots client on iPhone and iPad. And TapBots has been saying that they're going to make TweetBot for the Mac as well, a desktop version. Their response to the Twitter API changes is, don't panic. TweetBot for the Mac is still coming out. TweetBot for iOS isn't going anywhere. He says that because we have so many users already, we're not threatened by the user caps. We will modify our client to comply with any API display requirements. We're going to work with Twitter. So... he says the beta of TweetBot for Mac will be coming soon, shortly followed by the final release of the Mac App Store. I currently use and love Osphora on the desktop. That was an iOS app that Don McAllister told us about, and they've made a desktop app. And the reason I use it is because it's retinized, but it's also just great. You can shrink these icons down on the left, and it just makes it very easy to tweet in real time. I'd like to see more of a real time feed, but I think that might be a Twitter issue. All right. I think we're going to take a break, come back with your iOS, your Lion, and your picks of the week. Are you ready, gentlemen? If not, you have 1 minute.
Red 5 standing by.
red leader. Let Rover come over. No, that's a different game. Audible.com. It is the place, my friends, for the best audiobooks in the world. 100,000 plus great recordings, wonderful books. One of the challenges is to go to Audible and browse through it and go, oh, I'd like to read that. I want to read that. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you a book free. It plays on your Mac. It plays on your PC if you happen to have one of them lying around. It also plays great on your iPhone, your iOS devices. The iPhone app is great. The iPad app is just the iPhone app, but it works very well. Your whole library is available to you. Download it and listen at any time. They have it also for Android and Windows Phone. I'm a big fan. And you know that. I've been a big fan now for, what, 11, 12 years? I have over 500 books in my library. One of the things I love about Audible is that your library is always available to you. So I can say I want to see everything I've ever purchased in the, 20 years I've been, 10 years, what is it, since 2011, I think. Or no, I'm sorry, 2001 or 2000. So let's see, more than 600 items now. I love it. And they're all available to me anytime, not only here to download and put on my iPod, but also in the app, which on the iPhone or Android phone. What are you listening to? Andy always has some great recommendations. In fact, I pay careful attention to his because I tend to listen to his stuff.
I'm nearly at the end of that Phil Rosenthal book I recommended a mm-hmm. week or two ago, You're Lucky, You're Funny, which is quickly becoming one. I think it's certainly one of my favorite books ever on Audible. Awesome. It'll certainly be in the top five, no question. Lined up on deck when I finished that is a book I encountered, Fear and Loathing in Rolling Stone, The Essential Writing of Hunter S. Thompson,
ooh,
which is a highly curated selection of prime Hunter S. Thompson pieces for Rolling Stone back when he was still able to really step up to bat and swing and connect the ball. The legend of Hunter S. Thompson has kind of expanded beyond his actual output. It's almost not something we should joke about. I mean, he was part of what made his writing so dynamic and his story so rich were all the drug abuse and all right. the craziness he got involved in. Unfortunately, that had a really serious effect on his ability to focus and do that same kind of journalism later in his career. So the idea of having a really good curated collection of his stuff. So this has all been handpicked by Jan Wenner. And there are also letters and also comments from Jan Wenner himself about how this thing works. So I did listen to the sample. The other good thing is that it's not narrated by Hunter S. Thompson. I have listened to something narrated by Hunter S. Thompson in like the 80s, and that the charm wears off pretty damn quick.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then when we started going give me the stuff I need to read. And then there's an expletive. Bastards. Sticking bastards. I'm going to read a damn thing.
I don't know. I'm looking through the Hunter S. Thompson bibliography on Audible, and there's a ton of stuff, but I don't think any of it's narrated by him. So
I'm sorry. This is a commentary track, I think, on Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Okay.
William. And I'm looking for, this is going to be great. He's going to talk about like the experience. And all of it is just like an open mic as he watches this movie and not paying attention. And it's rat blanking bastards became part of my vocabulary for the next.
You know what? I'm going to rent that movie just for the track. I can't wait to hear that.
That's my ringtone, but it can't be used in mixed company.
So this is good. This is 18 hours worth of Hunter S. Thompson's best writing as carefully edited. It's called Fear and Loathing at Rolling Stone, The Essential Writing of Hunter S. Thompson. That was where he did his best work. I highly recommend that. I've read most of this stuff, but I would love to hear it again. But that's just one of many books that you could choose from. I'm just looking through my library here on my iPhone. I mean, just have a ton. I just got The End of Money, which I'm really curious to read about. It's talking about the new ways of exchanging value that are, you know, post money. But look, these are every book I've ever had. It goes on and on and on and on.
And there's a really good Audible app for all platforms.
So great. Just
get this in the crowd. So I can switch between the iPhone and the Android phone
yep.
and an iPad really easily.
Yep. I love it.
I dig it.
The one thing I wish they'd have, and I'm sure at some point they'll add, the Amazon owns them, so Whisper Sync, which means that whatever point I'm at on one device, it would automatically jump to that point on every other device. I would just a pitch to get that. Because I would love that feature. But I just, you know what I do? I just make a note of what minute and second I'm at, and it's easy to go to the next app. Here's how you can get Fear and Loathing of the Rolling Stone or any single credit book free right now by going to audible.com/MacBreak. You will be signing up for the gold account. That's a book a month. First month's free. First book's free. You can cancel anytime. It's yours to keep forever. I think this is a really great deal. And if you have not started listening to Audible, I get tweets all the time and emails now from people who say, you know, I've heard you talk about Audible for years, and it literally has been something like 4 or 5 years, and I finally joined it. Why didn't you tell me? Because you weren't listening, I guess. Audible.com/MacBreak. Really, this is something you want to try. Mr. Alex Lindsay, do you have by any chance an iOS tip for us today?
I do. This is a bit of a travel tip along with an iOS tip because I'm spending a lot of time in airports. So One of the things that, a lot of airlines have been doing is giving you these apps that let you, you know, open up, or they'll do HTML5 or whatever, where they'll send you a link of your check-in. You check in,
yeah,
and they send you a link of your boarding pass that sits on your phone.
Yeah.
The problem is that most of those are something that is web-driven. So they're, you know, they're popping you into Safari and they're showing it. That seems great, except that a lot of airports don't work really well on the, you know, as far as your 3G and 4G service, because there's so many people hitting it.
Right.
And so literally I've walked up to, you know, I've walked up to a, to the thing going like shaking it, thinking it would go faster. Like, I can't get my boarding pass, you know, up. And then I have to go ask for a paper pass, and it's very embarrassing. I look like an idiot. So the way to handle that is if you get your boarding pass set up like that, and then the best thing to do is take a screen capture. So get your boarding pass, filling the screen, make sure that the QR code is showing, and then simply capture the screen like you would do an image, and then don't tell them that. You know, you can just, but you know, then you just have your iPhone. You, instead of opening the web page, you open iPhoto.
Clever.
And then you can simply put it over there. You always have it. So as soon as you get it,
right,
you always get it, because it doesn't stay stay permanent. And it's something that hopefully that will save somebody some brain cells, because it's very
just take a screenshot. Screenshots are forever.
Yes, that's it.
Mr. Inatko, a lion, or I guess it's mountain lion now, but an OS 10 tip from us, from you.
This is one of my favorite kinds of tips, the kind where I came across this by accident and then felt stupid to the factor of 10 to the 23rd for like days after it, figuring out why did I not notice this beforehand. It involves the color picker that most macOS apps use for picking colors. And so I brought up a picture that I used last week, and this is a picture of a bunny. Mr. Hare is in my backyard. And sometimes you're designing things, and you're designing a website, or you're designing like a logo or something. And you know, if you went to art school, you know color theory and color palettes. If you did not go to art school, you don't understand why you shouldn't put brown and purple next to each other. But the shortcut to that is to find an existing product, an existing book cover, or an existing picture with a color palette that you actually like. Then what you can do is, in the standard color picker, you can actually open up that picture. There are separate tabs inside the color picker. If you look at here, I got it open right here. That the third one along is actually, there's the color wheel, there's the sliders, there's swatches, there's the crayons. But in the middle, there is actually a spot so that you can select an actual picture. Normally, this is preloaded with a color spectrum. And so for years, I thought, okay, there's giving me every possible color. I can just click on one of those and just choose the color I want. No, if you pull that drop down, you can actually select the image that is going to be used as your palette, and then you can just basically eyedropper all the colors that you actually want. So here I've designed a web page that uses colors selected from that bunny photo. So it is such a great shortcut.
Wow, that looks nice.
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
that looks good.
These are colors that actually like exist in nature.
It's
and
green and brown. That works.
Not a single one of those colors like came from any other color picker or other color palette. I just simply said, I want, for the sidebar, how about the bunny fur? The fur of the bunny. Like, how about I want that leaf for that green up there? And for this text, I'll use that fleck of beautiful beige fur on the bunny's cheek. It's going to be the bunny cheek. But you can imagine how well it would work if you would do things like, there are times, especially another thing that I often do, and using this is, you know, that I read a lot of comic books, and there are brilliant colorists who do nothing but understand color theory when they color these books. And so you will see a dramatic page where it's a night scene all painted in blues and beiges and oranges and reds, and just scan that picture in and just use that as your color palette for the next project you're working on, be it a blog, be it whatever else. Like I said, this feature has been staring me in the face, you know, for years. Must be for the past three or four revisions of macOS when they've moved to that standard color picker, and I can't believe that never occurred to me that, well, what if that's not just a picture of the spectrum? Is it possible to actually drag another? Oh, you can drag another photo. Oh, isn't that interesting?
I like it. It's called Color Picker.
No, it's the standard color picker that's in so many apps. Like, it's in Pages.
I got it.
Right, exactly. Anytime you ask for color, again, it gives you the standard picker gives you a bunch of different options for that.
Right.
Like, again, color. Do you want the color wheel? Do you want hue, saturation, brightness sliders? Do you want swatches? Do you want the crayons? The third one along, the one that actually looks like a landscape, is the place where you can actually just drag in a photo and use that as the eyedropper sampler to just grab colors from where you want.
So if you're using a kind of a Mac app that does everything right, Safari probably doesn't, I would guess.
Well, it's not. Safari isn't an app where you choose colors.
No, you don't choose colors. You're right. It has to be somewhere you choose colors. Anyway.
It works in Pages. Would work in Keynote. It would work in, right, certainly.
Time for our picks of the week. You got the talking stick, Andy Yanaka. Why don't you kick things off?
Very quick one. Grummel, Gruml, which is a really good free Google Reader client app for the Mac. It's the other standard for pick if you want like a desktop client for your Google Reader subscriptions is NetNewsWire. NetNewsWire has a lot more features. You can do offline stuff. You also don't necessarily have to be. It does better for offline stuff. The problem is though, it's free with ads, and if you want to use it ad free, it's $15. Gruml is as good at the basic stuff, and it's completely free. GRUMLApp.com.
Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week.
So I use a lot of webcams, and one of the problems with webcams, of course, is if you don't have, we're used to also having professional cameras where you have tons of control over your color and exposure, and a lot of times a webcam is just doing some kind of auto exposure, auto color, and depending on where you put your head, it can work or not work. Well, there's a new app. I talked about a kind of a hack that was out there before. There's now a new app in the iTunes store that actually allows you to control your webcam settings directly, and it's a lot easier to use. It's called Webcam Settings. And I don't know, it's $7.99. If you really want to look good on a webcam, this is much easier than the hack that I think I had talked about before. So simply what you can do is, like, for instance, if I click mine to manual now, I have a little slider. You can see that I'm controlling it. This is not like iGlass, which is basically overlaying a correction on top of your webcam. This is actually changing your webcam settings. And so you get, you know, you really get the full exposure. It doesn't flatten out. I can also go in here and turn off my auto and start playing, you know, playing with my color balance. One of the things is that we find that there is less effect than iGlass on the performance of the camera, as well as that this is truly changing the camera settings. And so if it's something you're attached to and you really want to make sure that you can really fine tune your camera to just the way you want it, for a webcam, this is really a must have. So Webcam Settings, $7.99 on the iTunes store.
Really good. Everybody who comes on our shows and uses a Mac should be using it.
Exactly.
You remember that great Atari game called Pitfall? Remember that? It was like a great 8-bit game where you'd...
I spent probably entire summer listening to Men at Work playing Pitfall on my Atari.
Let me see if I can get the audio coming off of this, because Atari has released Pitfall for both iOS, for the iPad and the iPhone. And let me just see if, because it's going to play the audio here.
Like literally, if I hear Cargo by Men at Work, all I can hear is...
Remember this? Yes. Well, it's here, ladies and gentlemen. No, wait a minute. This is such an 8-bit. Seems like on a modern platform, we could perhaps do a little bit. Oh, there you go. Pitfall is a 3D game. Actually, if you've played Tomb Runner, the game where you run, Temple Run, this will be very familiar. It's a kind of a third-person running, jumping, escaping game. But I actually kind of like the Pitfall metaphor for it. You're kind of in, oh, I missed the rope. Let me try that again. Let's see here. Whoa, yeah, rope. Oh yeah. I don't know if you can see this, but it really is fun. 99 cents right now from Atari. If you've been playing a lot of Temple Run, it'll seem pretty familiar. It's not straight on its sideways, although as we get a little farther along, it'll come straight on. It moves around in its perspective. And it's pretty challenging. A lot of fun. Oh, man. Pitfall. running. It really is. And you see, we get kind of some interesting stuff. It's a kind of the next step in running games. Alex Lindsay, thank you for joining us all the way from Tampa Bay, Florida.
My pleasure.
And where do you go next?
I'm going to be in Tampa for a couple weeks, and then I'm going to Charlotte, and then I'm might be going to Paris, and then I'll be home. I'll be home just before the 12th.
Okay. So. By the way, not Atari. It was on the Atari. It's an Activision game, of course. How could I have been so foolish? Well, we look forward to having you in studio for the big announcement in a couple of weeks. That'll be
can't wait.
Fun. Yeah. You too, Andy. I hope you maybe can get you to come up at some point when you're out here.
I will be looking forward to the complimentary beverages that I've been hearing tell
tales. I'll invite you over to the place. We'll make you some espresso with my new espresso machine. Ooh, it's good. It's good stuff. Andy Iannocco writes for the Chicago Sun-Times. He's also a blogger at www.cwob.com. Thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, every Tuesday on Twit. And, of course, after the fact, you can download on-demand versions from twit.tv/mbw or wherever you get your better podcast stuff. And, Alex, I just realized we kept you a little longer than we planned. I'm sorry.
No problem. I'm just hanging on, and I'm going to be booking out of here. So.
Thank you for making it through the show.
Yeah.
Now, Absolutely. Everybody, you get back to work, because break time is over.